Welcome to the Iron Self Podcast, where we jump into health, fitness, mindset, and becoming the best version of yourself. Today with your hosts, Mike and Kayla Minion.
So welcome to This Week in Coaching, where we go over sticking points that some of our clients have had last week, and we talk about them a little bit more in depth to hopefully help everybody grow and evolve, because that's really what this is all about.
Yeah, this is what we like to call like the added value, right? We are throwing out some more information for everybody that is looking to improve their situation, that is looking for those gains within their life, and there's lots of different aspects of our lives that we can get those gains in.
So sticking points that we want to address this week are being successful with meal planning, addressing our energy levels a little bit more, and then being on holidays or travel and eating on the go or eating out and what that might look like. So we'll just kind of jump right in and see kind of where we're at.
Well, I love that the first and the third one kind of go together, right? Because it's like being successful with your meal planning. And then it goes into, you know, what does it look like when we're traveling or on holidays and we're going to be not at home and trying to make healthy food choices? So I love how number one and three kind of go together today.
They do. They definitely do. So let's jump into being successful with meal planning. So I'm going to be totally honest with you guys. I am not that person that sits down Sunday night and meal plans. I have great intentions, and there was a period of time in my life when I did do that, and I found it overwhelming, and another thing that I quote-unquote had to do, and I mean, let's be honest, when we have a to-do list, we start prioritizing things.
And then it turns into a honey-do list, and you send it off to your spouse.
Yeah, but I mean, like, with the to-do list and you prioritize things, like, there's things that go to the wayside. Often people will throw their workouts to the wayside, meal planning, things where it is prioritizing yourself and your own goals, and they kind of get pushed off for everything else. So what does it look like to meal plan? So I'm more of a daily meal planner in the sense of I will take a protein source out first thing in the morning, whether that be beans, lentils, meat, whatever that might be, so that it is able to defrost through the day or that I have an idea of what I'm going to cook. And then through that day, I kind of come up with an idea of what I'm going to make with it. So that way I'm not like, okay, well, I don't know what I'm going to make. I also have a fallback plan. And this is, I think you guys have heard us talk about fallback plans in the past. If you haven't, you should get a fallback plan. And a fallback plan is essentially if shit hits the fan and you didn't take something out or you don't know what to cook, what are you going to cook instead? So my fallback plan is always chicken. I always have chicken in the freezer. I know I can always throw it in the oven or on the barbecue, and it makes life easy. I also have beans and or canned beans or canned salmon, canned tuna, canned chicken available. So there's always one of those that I can always choose as my fallback plan. But for me, meal planning means taking it out in the morning so I know what I'm going to make that evening.
Awesome. For myself, meal planning means making it stupid simple. So I am the type of person, I am a little bit different than Kayla. Kayla needs variety in her food. And I love that about her because I get to eat that food too, so I get that variety as well. But the reality is I am all about simplicity. So when I know I need to eat a shit whack of calories, I eat the same calories most days to make it that much easier for myself. So if you are somebody that is just starting out with meal planning and prepping, what I like to suggest for people is to make it as easy as possible. It's like when anytime we're trying to create a new habit, we want to make these new habits as easy and as painless as they can be so that we can stick with these long term. So if you are somebody like Kayla that, you know, you pick a meat in the morning kind of thing, that's totally okay too. But what I like to say is having like three or four options for your proteins, for your carbohydrates, and for your vegetables that you can really put together at any meal. So if you are somebody that enjoys chicken, making sure you always have that chicken on hand. Or if you're somebody that enjoys beef or you are a cattle rancher, having that meat available to you so that when you are hungry, when you're looking for what to eat for that dinner or for that night, it's available right then and there. So picking a couple options that you enjoy and that are readily available to you will help you with your meal prep tons because it makes it less less of a chore to have to look at your food and be like, oh my God, what am I going to eat? Because you've already kind of set out, well, these are my proteins that I enjoy. These are my carbohydrates that I enjoy. And realistically, I can put them together and create a meal pretty easily. So again, especially when you're first starting, like when we start any habit, making it as simple as possible is going to help you bring that success in. So again, not overcomplicating, not thinking that you need to make these extravagant recipes every single night. If you want to plan those, great. Plan them for, you know, later on in the week when you've had some time to prep for them. But on a daily basis, trying to, again, make it as easy as possible. So picking a couple leaner proteins, picking some carbs and picking some veg and some fats really makes your life a lot easier.
I love that idea because I think that we're really focusing on dinner, kind of the way we're talking. But I want you guys to think about this in regards to any meal. If you have 3 to 4 different options of what you can have for protein, carbohydrates, fats at each different meal, then you'll have a good variety of what you're going to eat. My breakfast is one of two things most days. So for me, I don't really plan breakfast because I know I'm gonna have either my breakfast salad that I love or my protein pancakes that I also love. And that gives me enough variety because I can change up the veggies I put together for the breakfast salad. I can change up the toppings that I put on my protein pancakes. That for me is enough variety at breakfast. When it comes to lunch, I love leftovers, and I'm also with Mike on the keep it stupid simple. So keep it stupid simple, what does that look like? I always have rice cooked in the fridge, for the most part. Or basmati cooks up really fast.
When she is not in peak weeks, there's always rice.
We always have chicken cooked in the fridge, usually cut up. Or, like I said before, we always have some sort of canned protein available in the cupboard. So we always have those go to, and then we have tons of fresh veggies. One thing to think about with fresh veggies is, can you batch cut them up? Meaning, so you're going to cut up some cucumber for your kids' lunch. Instead of cutting up, you know, 6 slices of cucumber for your kids' lunch, cut up the entire cucumber, put it in a Tupperware container, and put it in your fridge. Now you have the easy grab-and-go veggies, right? Can you cut up extra bell peppers? Or maybe you're lazy and you want to have frozen veg on hand that you can easily throw into a stir-fry. Maybe that's another way of doing it. So just knowing your meal habits, what you enjoy eating, and then having those things available. The nice thing with always having like a protein and some rice already cut up, ready to go in your fridge, is that you can heat it up in the microwave, in the toaster oven, in a pan. You could easily create a stir fry. You could easily have just rice and chicken with some sort of sauce on it.
Or even throw it onto a salad, right? Like you put fried rice and chicken onto a salad, it's freaking delicious.
Well, it's like chopped leaf, right?
100%.
I mean, like, you just change up the dressing a little bit. Now, the...
Love a little shoulder shave there.
I know, do you like that? The biggest thing is, with meal planning, is just keeping it simple to start. Like, don't feel like you need to have, like, these big changes in your meals. Maybe there's a couple different varieties of flavors that you really like. So if I batch cook up chicken, I always put seasoning, salt, and garlic on it because I know I can flavor it with anything after the fact. Hot sauces, they're zero calories. Delicious. Mustards, like there's lots of different things that you can put on it. The other thing to think about is like maybe you like curries. So maybe you buy some curry paste and you have coconut milk on hand, or you put it in a broth and make a soup. Like there's lots of variety that you can do very, very simply without having to get overcomplicated, yeah. I guess is what we're saying.
No, and I love that. Keeping it like we've been saying, just keeping it as simple as you can for your meal prep. And one other thing that I want to toss out there, a lot of times when people have a huge variety of options, they almost get paralyzed by having too many options, right? If you buy all of the vegetables at a grocery store and you have every single type of protein and you have rice, potatoes, beans, pasta, literally every carb that you could as an option, sometimes it almost gets overwhelming with how many choices you have to create those meals. So maybe kind of choosing 3 or 4 vegetables per week kind of ideal when you're doing your grocery, if you shop weekly, that is, right? But choosing a couple for the week and going with them so that you don't have so much variety that you get paralyzed by those choices. Just another tip there, because there's been enough of our clients where they're like, well, I went out and I bought all of the vegetables and I was so prepared for the week, But then when I got to my dinners, I found myself kind of like struggling with what to choose because I didn't know what to put together. And it's like, well, yeah, you gave yourself almost too many options. And then it's like, well, you don't want your stuff going bad. So now you're trying to cook little pieces of it just to make sure you're using it. Don't overcomplicate it. Don't buy yourself too much for the week or the 2 weeks, whatever it looks like for your grocery schedule. And really picking things that can go with anything, but that when on their own can be served up as well, right? So variety that will work for your meals.
Well, and always having staples on hand. So what do you consider a staple food?
Rice.
So we consider rice a staple food. Most proteins are a staple food. Having onions and garlic available are staple foods in our house. We also consider bell peppers a staple food. Those kinds of things where they're interchangeable in a variety of meals versus it just being one specific meal. So, like, I love bok choy. Bok choy is one of my favorite vegetables of all time. But it's not interchangeable in a ton of meals.
It is a stir-fry meal.
It's a stir-fry, or it's going to go into some sort of a faux broth. Or served on its own, right? But the outside of that, it's not really a staple food.
You're not throwing bok choy in a pasta.
Right. So when you're looking at meal planning, and you're going to buy something like bok choy or another vegetable that isn't quote-unquote a staple that's interchangeable in a lot of different recipes, then being very prepared or diligent in your choices of when you're going to cook that and what that might look like in your meal variety. But the biggest thing that we're trying to say with meal planning is keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate it, especially when you're starting out, especially if you're not really comfortable cooking food. Like, there's a lot of people that aren't overly comfortable in the kitchen, or they don't enjoy that part. That for me is my favorite part. Mm-hmm. But each person is very, very different in that. So keep it simple with your meal planning. Don't overcomplicate it, and have staples available.
And batch cook, people. Please listen when we say batch cook, because if you cook a shit whack of chicken at the start of the week, that's easy to throw in salads. That's easy to throw in with some noodles or some rice for lunches. It is so easy to create leftover lunches that are going to fit your goals that take you almost no time, because it's when you've already overcooked your food, like you've cooked too much, then you're packaging it up so that is an easy meal for you, especially when you're going to work.
The other thing I should mention too, like Mike said, with batch cooking. So for example, with dinner, we overcook dinner every single night.
We don't overcook it, but we overcook it.
Oh yeah, right. I get what you're saying. No, yeah, we don't overcook the thing.
We cook the chicken to 260 degrees.
But we make a lot of it, is I guess what I'm trying to say. And we make a lot of it so that we do have leftovers. For us, we put leftovers in big giant containers in the fridge because we can eat it through the week, especially on our busier nights where we maybe don't have time to cook dinner. Then we can have that fallback plan for those leftovers. But another option is pre-packaging it into Tupperware containers. So we have small containers and we have big containers. And then we put them in portion sizes in those containers so that I know the small containers are for me, the bigger containers are for Mike. So if we're having one of those times where it's like, oh, I don't know what to eat, we can go into the freezer and grab one of those containers. And I know it's already pre-packaged, sized out for me. It's
ready
to
go. Oh my
gosh, my brain is not working.
Well, and it's funny because we actually do that for the entire family too. So if we, like when Kayla's making pasta, or not pasta, sorry, but like a lasagna, or we've done it with lots of soups and things like that, where again, we cook entirely too much food on purpose, but then we create these dishes that are literally thrown in the oven and the whole family is fed. So again, whole meals that are in those, what are those called, Corningware?
Yeah, we put them in.
Yeah, we put them in Corningware dishes, then throw them in the freezer, and then it's quite literally out of the freezer into the oven. For those nights where you don't have that time, for anybody who has kids in sports or kids activities, or if you are just busy, maybe you're working two jobs. Maybe you're working a nighty or an evening shift and a day shift at different jobs. So your life is very busy. Being able to just come home, grab that, throw it in the oven makes your life that much easier.
The other thing that I wanted to mention with meal planning is it doesn't have to be crazy. So you could think about, what is a protein, a carbohydrate, a fat, and a vegetable that I can have at each meal? So if you're like, oh my goodness, I don't know what to have, just gravitate towards one of each. One protein, one carb, one vegetable, one fat, so that you have one of everything at each meal and you're not like, oh my goodness, did I get enough nutrients today? No, I know what I'm having. Depending on your goals, right? So if you're on a weight loss goal, maybe not every meal has carbohydrates in it, or every meal maybe doesn't have fat source in it. But you have, at least have a protein and a veg at most meals, and then you can navigate that accordingly.
Perfect. Love it.
Okay. Energy levels.
Go to sleep, people.
Sleep is important.
When we are talking about energy, a lot of people are lacking a quality sleep. I'm not saying lacking sleep. This is why, and anybody who's ever trained with us, we always ask, how is your sleep? What was the quality of your sleep? Mm-hmm. Because people that, you know, they stay up late and then they pass out watching TV and then they wake up to go to work for the day. Generally, that's not quality sleep because, again, you have that blue light right before you go to bed. There's no real wind down before you hit your head on your pillow. So then you're less likely to hit those deep stages of sleep, that REM sleep. So then when we're waking up still feeling a little bit tired. A lot of it comes back to how we prepare for bed. And it's funny because I was talking to a client about this yesterday, and it really is like, I always say, sleep like a baby, right? So whenever we are talking about energy levels and sleep, when we are looking at setting ourselves up for success with sleep as adults, we have to treat ourselves like we're babies. We need to be in a dark room, just like you would for your baby. We need to be in a quiet room, just like you would for your baby. We need to be in a, did I say dark room already?
Yes, dark, quiet.
Dark, quiet, cool. A cool room. You don't want it to be like heat blasting, keep you up all night. What other ones do we need? Quiet, dark.
No, that's right.
Yeah, and then if you want to, you can add like a scent. Like a lot of people say lavender will help you fall asleep. 100%. It has been shown to help aid you in falling asleep. Not necessarily keeping you asleep and keeping that sleep quality higher, but the initial effort to fall asleep has been shown to decrease when there is lavender present. So energy levels, I wanted to start with sleep. So there it is for you people. Sleep like a baby.
The other thing to think about when it comes to a nighttime routine, like Mike's already kind of alluded to, is having some sort of routine to wind down in the evening, is paying attention to when your last time you eat is. So if you eat at, say, 9 p.m. and you plan to go to bed at 10 p.m., the thing is that your body's in a digestive state. And when your body's digesting, then it doesn't actually want to wind down as easily and it doesn't want to sleep as deeply. And you don't get into that REM sleep as soon because your body's spending all this time digesting. So thinking about prioritizing when your last meal is, you want your last time you eat to be about 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed. And that has been shown scientifically to really, really help with sleep and getting into a nice deep sleep and longer rest time because your body's not spending all that time digesting. The other thing with sleep is that our body burns the most calories. We get our memory storage.
That's where we lose our weight.
All of that kind of stuff takes place while we sleep. So if we're not prioritizing sleep, which many of us think of sleep as more reactive versus a prioritization of something, then you're not going to get as good of quality out of that. Looking at your circadian rhythm, rising with the sun, setting with the sun. I know when you live in the northern hemisphere, the sun rises at like 4 a.m. and it sets at like 11 p.m. So that's not obviously the best advice, but the idea is going to bed at roughly the same time each night and waking up at roughly the same time most days is going to be really important for creating that cycle because then your body can go, okay, this is when I'm going to start my melatonin production. This is when I'm going to start my cortisol production, right? Cortisol should be highest in the morning because it makes us rise and get out of bed. Our melatonin should be coming in the evening as the cortisol levels drop through the day. If you are high stress at the end of your day or you come off work and you're stressed out and now you got to run the kids all over the place and you're super high stress and you don't actually start winding down until 9 o'clock at night, then you might notice that it takes a little bit longer. Maybe you're an 11 or 12 o'clock now time to bed, and that's really because you're not allowing yourself to de-stress, so your body isn't producing the melatonin that it needs in order to wind down.
Awesome. Another thing about melatonin that I want to throw out there is blue light. So your televisions, your tablets, your phone interfere with your melatonin production. So this is why we always say 1 to 2 hours before you are thinking you're going to be going to bed is where screen time should cease. Now, I know that's hard for a lot of people because it's like, that's how I wind down at the end of my day. So maybe just choosing a routine where you have at least an hour at the end of your day with no screen time so that you're melatonin gets to actually raise how it's supposed to. Because when we have the screens on, our eyes see that as like that unnatural light, that light coming in, so our body doesn't start producing that melatonin to put us into that sleep state too.
Okay, I'm going to touch on light, because light is, the research that's coming out on light is
freaking
huge and really, really cool. So if you are struggling with energy levels, first things first, you should be getting 15 minutes at least, up to 30 minutes if you can. First thing in the morning.
Sun on your skin.
So whether that be light, ideally from outdoors, whether it be cloudy or sunny, it doesn't matter because it's still going to be brighter than any light in your house. So ideally, actual light from outside first thing in the morning. If that's not possible, then some sort of bright light in the house would be fine. First thing in the morning, because the more light we expose our eyes to, even if you're blind, the studies have been done even on blind people. So the more light you expose your eyes to, the more your body reacts to that as a wake time. If you're noticing your energy levels start to drop towards the afternoon, maybe getting more light again right around lunchtime, early afternoon, because that does tell your body that, hey, it's still light out. So it's actually going to keep everything coming up. If you're noticing that your energy levels are dropping, a lot of the time it's because your body isn't getting the light that it needs. And then as it comes into the evening, we want to start to dim those lights. So, you know, if you are going to have wind down time in the evening, just trying to reduce the lights in your house, maybe making it a little bit darker, a little bit quieter, just it creates this wonderful circadian rhythm with light. Anyways, that was one of the big things I wanted to touch on with that.
I love it.
The other part of energy levels is looking at your nutrients that you are bringing into your body along with caffeine.
And alcohol.
These are the three things that we want to talk about just briefly. Maybe we'll do a whole podcast episode on energy levels because I feel like I could talk about this forever. But
no, I agree 100%. And it is so important to look at the nutrients that we are consuming, right? So what does the food look like? Are we eating high fat foods? Are we eating highly palatable, highly processed foods? The reason I'm asking this is because they don't fuel our bodies as well. Our bodies take more energy to actually process this food. So when our body is spending the calories and the energy to process the food, we aren't getting the energy to use as readily available, so to speak.
Well, yeah, and are you spiking your blood glucose levels and then getting that drop? Yeah. So looking at that nutrient that you are nourishing your body with, I know for me, having carbohydrates at breakfast increases my hunger and decreases my energy through the day. Not everybody is that same way, but starting to pay attention to those nutrients that you are having and whether or not they are affecting your energy levels. Things that cause inflammation in your body. Now, I'm not saying in my body, but in your body. Every person's body is different. Will decrease your energy levels, increase brain fog, increase fatigue. So things like dairy, gluten, soy, corn, eggs, like these are our main things that are shown to be inflammatory and cause sensitivity in the body. So if you're noticing brain fog, fatigue, those kinds of things on a chronic basis, starting to look at those main ones that you might be consuming on a regular basis and decide for yourself whether or not that is actually affecting your overall energy levels.
Love it. And then alcohol. I wanted to touch on alcohol. I've had clients in the past that were asking me why they're always tired in the morning. And then we go back to the previous day and they had 6 or 8 beers that night. And I'm like, so you probably didn't sleep as well because you had alcohol before you went to bed, because you don't really sleep. You just kind of pass out.
There's a difference between passing out and sleeping.
Exactly, right? But these questions have been asked. So it's worthwhile saying, yeah, because obviously everybody doesn't understand this. So when we are consuming alcohol, we don't get that quality sleep. We're not going to hit that deep sleep, those REM stages of sleep as easily. I'm not saying you won't hit them, but you might only hit them at 5 a.m. right before you're about to get out of bed, and then you don't spend enough time in REM sleep to actually get the benefits of it. So alcohol before you go to bed, if you're dealing with low energy, definitely not the best idea. And then you're also going to have that, the inflammation in your guts the next morning when you're waking up, because again, alcohol for literally everybody is inflammatory.
And a poison.
There is no way to say that it is not. Oh no, you're good. Drink all the booze you want. And I'm not saying by any means don't enjoy a glass of wine or don't enjoy a beer with your friends. I'm not saying that by any means. But if you are going to be doing that, don't complain about your energy levels the next day. Understand that there is an ebb and a flow with that energy. And when we are drinking, we can't expect to be chipper and bright first thing in the morning the next day, because your sleep would be affected by the alcohol. And then waking up first thing the next morning, those energy levels will be lower because your body's going to be fighting that inflammation.
If you're ready to make a change in your life, step into the best version of you, check out our Iron Self Transformation Program. Find more info on our website, www.ironbodycoach.com.
Now, looking at caffeine.
Saucing that one out there.
Because Mike doesn't want to hear about your complaints with alcohol.
Well, it's not that. It's
no,
just...
I know. I'm just bugging you. I don't want to hear you complain.
She's right. I don't want to hear that shit.
Anyways, so caffeine levels. So we get a lot of clients that obviously drink coffee or tea first thing in the morning for that morning energy. And then they're noticing that their energy levels drop. Well, because you get that caffeine spike. Most people load their coffee full of cream and sugar.
Most people get the sugar spike, not the coffee spike.
But you're getting both, cream and sugar spike. And then your blood sugar levels crash hard because caffeine causes a crash regardless, okay? So we have a crash from caffeine, a crash from sugar. And then they're like, well, the only way to get more energy again is to have more caffeine. So then they have another cup of coffee, and then they have, so that's lunchtime coffee, then they have mid-afternoon coffee. Now I can't figure out why I can't sleep because I'm having caffeine at 4 p.m. Well,
what's the half-life of caffeine?
Caffeine is 6 to 8 hours.
6 to 8 hours. So think about that. 6 to 8 hours worth of essentially
energy.
Blocking your sleep, yeah. Right? So if you are somebody that has a coffee at 5 o'clock because otherwise you're not making it to 9 o'clock, that caffeine is in your system at the very minimum until 11 p.m. So if you're having those afternoon coffees and you're wondering, why am I having such a hard time sleeping? I had my last coffee at 5 and it's midnight.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the half-life. So half-life just means how long that caffeine stays present in your system, depending on your metabolism, depending on your body composition, 6 to 8 hours. Mind-blowing.
Well, I had a client that was drinking Diet Coke at 5 p.m. when she got home from work every day.
55 milligrams of caffeine.
And which, 55 milligrams doesn't sound like much, but she was like, I can't sleep. I'm not sleeping very well. I'm having a really hard time getting to sleep. And I said, well, what if you swapped out your Diet Coke for a Diet 7-Up? Well, she did that, and within 2 days, her sleep quality improved, she was able to sleep, and she's like, oh, this is awesome. Because for her, she just wanted that quote-unquote treat when she got home from work after a stressful day. And so it was just a matter of changing what she was consuming and to really improve that sleep quality. So I guess we haven't really given you a solution to caffeine for energy levels. One, drink black coffee. You won't get the sugar crash.
and it's
join the dark side.
And it's way better.
What's the thing once you go black?
No, don't even. Continue speaking.
The other side of this is trying to reduce your overall caffeine intake will really, really help you. So maybe you're noticing an afternoon crash. So instead of having a cup of coffee in the afternoon, maybe you're having a cup of tea that's going to have less caffeine in it. Or maybe you are just foregoing it and going cold turkey.
Or maybe you take a page out of España's book and you have a nice little siesta, right? Mm-hmm. Nap time. Power nap. Set that alarm for half hour, 45 minutes. Power nap.
There is some really great research with yoga nidra or what is it called? Non-sleep deep rest. And you can find meditations for both yoga nidra and non-sleep deep rest.
NSDR. Yep.
Yeah, and there's huge, huge benefits. So yoga nidra is typically about 40 minutes, but there is...
30 minutes is the equivalent of 6 hours of sleep.
No.
Or is it 3 hours?
No, it's 40 minutes is equivalent to 2.5 hours of sleep.
Go.
There you go. But... In 40 minutes, if you get the equivalent of 2.5 hours of sleep, that's a huge amount of rest for your body and your mind. But if you don't have 40 minutes because your lunch break is only 30 or you've got kids screaming at you, you can find a yoga nidra. You can also find a non-sleep deep rest that's only 10 to 15 minutes. And that might just be enough to give you that energy that you're needing in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Energy pickups too. You can do some concentrated breathing efforts. So... using our breath, we can actually increase our energy. Kayla is a huge fan of the Tony Robbins, what's it called?
Bastrika breathing.
Bastrika breathing, right? Mm. So that
So it's an exhale. So arms can come up or they can come out in front of you and you're pulling them in or down. I like it from above because I like to hammer myself in the ribs with my elbows from above.
I'm just going to step back.
But it's not COVID safe. It's because you're going to be moistly everywhere.
Just moistly breathe. Get it going.
Thank goodness nobody else is here. Just me. I can share my germs with you. So arms are going to go above your head and you're going to make a fist as you pull them down and hammer them into your ribs and you're focusing on that exhale. Okay, the inhale comes in automatically. So I like to say go for 20, take a couple second rest, go for 20, take a couple second rest, go for 20. You do that a couple times and one, not only is your brain buzzing and you have crazy amount of energy.
The blood flow is real.
The blood flow is real. So Bastrika breathing is great. Nadi Shodhana or alternate nostril
breath. Yeah.
Where you breathe, you inhale through one nostril, plug that nostril, exhale through the other nostril, then inhale through the nostril you just exhaled through, plug that nostril, and exhale through the other side.
Or so just going for a walk and breathing. That mindful, like tactical breathing, a cadence breath while you're walking gives you energy too.
Or that light, like we already said, light, afternoon light.
We were just touching on breath, so I want to touch on breath.
That's awesome. Okay, high five, meal planning and energy levels complete. Okay.
A weak high five, but I'll take it.
That was, I know I have really terrible hand-eye coordination.
It's okay.
You want to try again?
No.
One more time.
No, get out of here.
Don't leave me hanging.
Get out of here.
Okay.
All right. Being on holidays and traveling and eating out. So this is the Achilles heel for so many people when they are doing absolutely amazing. We have so many clients. We have so many clients that are doing absolutely amazing with their diet, and then vacation happens.
Or travel, for
right?
Whatever
they're going. Somebody's going on a drive. Somebody has to go to see family in another province. Somebody is going to Mexico. Somebody is going somewhere, and they're like, "I'm just gonna write this week off."
So, do you really want to take 5 steps back every time you go on vacation or you travel somewhere, I guess is the first question to ask. So, because most of us don't develop habits and routines that are new for these times because they're more of that one-off time.
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I like to say to absolutely anybody that is going on vacation is planning is key. If failing to plan is planning to fail, right? So taking that very seriously and looking at where am I going to be staying? Okay. So this is something Kayla and I do every time we go anywhere. We will always book the hotel that has a full kitchen. So we got a full-size fridge. We got a full-size stove, kind of.
Fish.
The last one we were at was not a full-size.
I just want at least a cooktop. Like, I don't care if it's got an oven, but at least a cooktop.
But the point is, we spend the extra money on the hotel that has the full kitchen because then we can bring our own food and eat according to our goals. Now, we will still obviously, like not obviously, but we still go out and enjoy ourselves for a meal out. For sure. We're on vacation. We're going to enjoy ourselves. But for the majority of our meals, we're eating at home, quote unquote, at the hotel that we're staying at, because then we can control what we are eating because we are serious about what we do. We are serious about our goals. So we want to have that control. Just like if you are serious about your goals, you need to have control when you are on vacation. So number one is planning. Find somewhere that has that full-size kitchen so that you can control your own meals. Great idea. Now, if you don't have that as an option, if you're going somewhere that you will not have your own kitchen to create your own meals, then we start looking at what are the healthiest options we can come up with. So now, we might not be able to cook, but we sure as hell can get bagged salads, we can get chicken, we can get rice, we can get all of the normal food we do that we can eat while we're out on the road.
So I want to touch on something. Because this is one of the biggest things, I know we're going to do a whole episode on this, is change does not come without inconvenience. Okay, so if you want a different result than what you're getting right now, you need to be prepared to be inconvenienced. Because what was convenient before got you to exactly where you are now. And what I mean by that is, if it's convenient to go through the McDonald's drive-thru, you will conveniently stay exactly as you are. If you want a different result, then you need to be inconvenienced. Right. Now I need to find something else to eat. Maybe that means I need to go into the grocery store and buy something that's already made. Maybe that means I need to find a healthier restaurant option. Maybe that means I need to sit with my hunger for a little bit and be hungry.
Hunger doesn't put you in mortal danger. This is another thing that we talk about all the time. We were on vacation, or just coming back from Kayla's competition this last weekend, and we were hungry driving home. But it was like, hunger isn't an emergency. Like, we can be hungry for a little bit here, and then once we get somewhere where we can have a healthy option, sure, we ended up going to Chop Leaf, because it was like, this is somewhere that we can choose something that still fits our goals and is freaking delicious. So we ended up going to Chop Leaf. We could have stopped at any of the other restaurants along the way that wouldn't have served our goals as well, right? But we made that conscious choice to sit with our hunger, be okay with it, and go somewhere that did serve our purpose.
We also had a client recently that was traveling and had gone to Subway for breakfast with her family. And normally we think, you know, Subway, it's healthy, right? And people think of Subway as healthy because you can buy salads there. But rarely do people buy salads. They're usually getting like a sandwich. And anyways, so she took her family to Subway for breakfast, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But she said, you know what? I know what I'm going to choose here isn't going to fit my goals. So she went to the gas station. And most people would be like, you went to the gas station for breakfast? Well, what she found at the gas station was a protein bar with 270 calories in it. So it's essentially like a meal replacement bar. And then she got a piece of fruit. She got a piece of fruit and a protein bar that fit her goals, and she was satiated. She said, I enjoyed it. I actually liked it more than I enjoyed Subway. So these are the other things to think about, is that maybe redefining what you used to think as quote unquote healthy or as an option and seeing what else might be out there. Because the things that we have for options at gas stations, I've been actually very, very surprised about lately. We found, pack of dill pickles?
Yeah.
You can buy like pre-packaged like packs of pickles now at gas stations, which I was surprised about anyways.
No, but it is so true, because there are a lot more healthy options at a lot more places than there used to be. So, like, go back 5 years, go back 10 years, the gas stations wouldn't have had fruit in them as often, mind you. I mean, there's probably still the odd one, but there wouldn't have been as much fruit. There sure as hell wouldn't have been protein bars. There, you know, it would have been chips and pop and chocolate bars and just garbage, right? So now you actually have these options at most gas stations to go in. There's normally fresh fruit. There's normally protein bars. There is normally food that can fit your goals just a little bit better. So again, when you are on the road, looking at how we can fuel ourselves the most efficient way possible, the best way for our goals. Now, that's not saying it has to be perfect every time. That's not saying you can't go out and enjoy yourself. It just means being more conscious if you have these specific goals, right? So this is, very, very specific.
Well, it's being more adaptable, regardless of what your goals are. If your goal is just general health, you need to be adaptable. So we always pack a big, giant cooler full of food and with lots and lots of food options. But maybe you decide to go out for a meal and you just choose to eat whatever you want at that one meal out. And then the next meal, you decide to have a protein source and some veggies. Like, it's being that ability to ebb and flow back and forth. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's just choosing the best option that you can at that time. You can also go into most restaurants and customize most things. I know a lot of people are like, whoa, I don't like to be that picky person. But they are there to serve you. Yeah, that is service. That is literally there in the service industry. So if they have, you know, something like, I often will get a salad or something with the sauce on the side. So I always ask for the sauce on the side so that I can control what goes on.
How many calories of sauce?
Well, because let's be honest, at the end of the day, most of the time, a lot of the calories are coming from the sauce that you're putting on your food than it is from the other parts of the food.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So looking at those options, you can also package up leftovers or pre-space out your portions at restaurants as well is another great option. So hopefully that kind of gives you guys an idea, but not using your holiday time or your travel time as the ability to just write things off.
As a cheat time.
Yeah, because your body also adapts to food over time. So if you've been eating really clean and really whole foods for a while, and then you decide to jump on and eat something that I'm going to call it a treat food, like a McDonald's or something like that, where it is like something that you're not normally consuming, you might notice you get a stomach ache, you don't feel so good, you've got indigestion, you've got gas, like, and that might just be for a short period of time, or it could affect you for a couple of days, because your body adapts to the types of foods that you're feeding it. The more often you feed it processed garbage, the more often that processed garbage isn't going to upset your system. But when you're eating really clean, the processed garbage quickly upsets your system.
You just made it sound like the best idea is to always eat processed garbage.
That was not. Because
then you can adapt to it. No,
but,
just
but you do adapt. And I don't know what the science looks like behind that.
You know what the science looks like behind eating highly palatable, highly processed foods?
Well, we got skipped the dishes the other day. Okay, so I'm going to go on a little tangent here. But we were, like, we've been eating really clean. And we decided after my first competition that we were going to have skipped the dishes, which was so good. What was it? Heaven gluten-free in Calgary? Anyways.
It's like a Mexican style food.
It was so good. We got empanadas. The indigestion.
Unreal.
Oh my gosh.
And that was just from a couple of empanadas. And like, for anybody who doesn't know, they're like pierogies
but
that
like
are deep fried and they're filled with delicious things.
Or, yeah, like almost like a samosa.
Yeah.
But they're made from corn.
Pierogies, samosa, same day.
Oh, they were so good. But, like, they were healthier, but because they're deep fried and they're not something I normally eat, the indigestion, the stomach ache, whatever, was awful after. And I would consider it a healthier choice. So just knowing that whatever you are choosing to consume, depending on what your normal food choices are, may affect your system. And it's just something to be aware of.
No, I love that. So again, just to recap a little bit here, planning your meals in advance, right? For meal planning in general, having a general idea of a couple different protein sources, carbs and fats that you enjoy, and then being able to put them together to make a meal without that much thought process behind it, right? Making it stupid simple, like we were saying. Energy, get to bed, people. Stop drinking your coffee and your caffeine at night. Stop drinking your booze before you go to bed. Try and shut screens off 1 to 2 hours before bed to help with that melatonin to get you into that sleep state. And then again, getting the light first thing in the morning when you're waking up, super important. Again, ideally outside, full skin, so your body gets to get all that light as well. Super important.
And don't eat 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed.
That as well. And then for meal planning on the road, hitting up gas stations is actually not a bad idea these days because they actually store stuff in them that will serve your goals. Choosing healthier options at restaurants. If your friends are all going out for McDonald's, maybe seeing if there's something that fits your goals closer around there. And if there isn't, then choosing something that fits your goals the best you can.
Like a grilled chicken with a lettuce wrap.
There she goes, because McDonald's actually got rid of salads. I heard that.
Yeah.
I don't know that for sure because I don't eat at McDonald's, but I heard they got rid of salads, which is kind of an oxymoron to me because it's like the one healthy thing they had and they're like, fuck it, we're not healthy, we're McDonald's.
It's a true story.
But anyways, choosing the healthier options that you can, and again, planning and preparing ahead of time. If you know you're going to stay at a hotel somewhere, pick the room that has a kitchen. It might cost you more to rent that room, but at the end of the day, when you're saving the money from going out every meal, because let's face it, anytime we go out for a meal as a family, it's a couple $100 for Kayla, I, and the kids to go and eat. At most restaurants, it's over $100, closer to that $200 mark, depending where you're going. So choosing to stay at a hotel that might cost you an extra $40 a night to have a kitchen, and you're going to be saving a couple $100 every day on meals, I'm Irish, I'm cheap. Saving money, high five all day. That's all.
I love it. I love it. Hopefully you guys got some value from today's episode and got some good information on all of these things. If you guys have any questions, make sure you send them our way. We would love to address them in our next This Week in Coaching. And that's all for now.
Yeah. If you guys have questions after when you're watching this as a replay, write them in the comments below because we get those notifications and then we can bring those and address those questions next week.
Yeah.
So you guys have an amazing rest of your week. Everybody write Kayla to wish her good luck in her competition on Saturday. And outside of that, have an amazing week, guys.
Bye for now.
Bye.